Welcome to episode 645 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard, and this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. It's another solo episode this week. Scheduling and other things got in the way, so no Richard this week, hopefully. We'll get back to normal-ish next week, hopefully. Another thing that we hope for next week is some listener feedback. If you'd like to send us some, the email address is entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. All the rest of our contact information we'll go over at the end of the show, or you can just head on over to the website, www.thedigitalmediazone.com, to get all of it there. All of our social information and the email addresses, all of that. And if you're watching on YouTube, you could, of course, just use the comment form down below. We read all of those also. And if you are watching on YouTube, do us a favor, click that like button, click the subscribe button, so that you won't miss a single episode of the show. All right, so since there isn't any listener feedback, let's jump right into the news. And kind of a follow-up from all of the spring and late winter TV announcements, Roku is launching their new Pro Series TVs. So these are the new top-of-the-line models for Roku. And yes, these are TVs. These are not just streaming boxes. These are actual TVs with the Roku experience built right into them, built to compete with the likes of, say, TCL, which had previously been making Roku TVs for years. So what's so great about these new pro level, pro series televisions that Roku is putting out? Well, the biggest thing is they have a mini LED backlighting system, and that means that you're going to see improved contrast ratios and brightness. So will they beat out the contrast ratio of an OLED? No, but they're very likely to beat out the brightness of most of the OLEDs that we like. So if you're looking for a really bright picture, then these mini LED TVs are a really nice step in the right direction. So these actually feature 120 hertz QLED panels. These are, of course, 4K TVs, and they do support HDR 10 Plus and Dolby Vision. So you're going to be able to get all of the 4K HDR goodness that you're hoping out of a higher end TV. And if you're wondering, like, what do these compare to then that's already on the market? Well, the closest competitors to these would be the TCL QM8 and the Hisense U8K. Both really good TVs on their own right. And frankly, that TCL series of TVs is typically the one that we talk about as being recommended by David Katzmeyer over at CNET as the best bang for the buck TV that you can get. So if we're talking about bang for the buck, what do these new Roku TVs cost? Well, they're available in three different sizes, 55, 65, and 75 inches. For the 55-inch, you're looking at $900, the 65 for $1,200, and the 75-inch for $1,700. And based on what some of the competition goes for, these are actually a little bit more expensive than some of their competitors. And at $1,200 for a 65-inch, I don't know, that's getting into like lower-end OLED or like LG OLED on sale pricing. And I, these might be really bright and look really good, but are they going to look better than an LG OLED? I doubt it. So, I mean, these are brand new. There aren't reviews out yet. So we'll have to wait to see what the big name reviewers have to say about them. But while I'm betting they're pretty good, I don't know that they're going to win out over, like, there's basically no chance that they end up looking better than LG OLEDs because they're not OLEDs. But will they be significantly better than those comparable models from TCL and Hisense? And will they be better enough to justify the increased price? Because just having Roku on board just plain isn't enough. You know, you can get a nice Roku player for $50, certainly less than $100 for the top of the line Roku. So these are going to have to be pretty spectacular, in my opinion, to justify the cost that Roku is looking at here. So we'll keep an eye out. Very, of course, very interested to see what David Katzmeyer over at CNET has to say about these, but all of the other major TV reviewers, I want to see what they have to say before we go out and really choose what makes the most sense for your dollars for your next TV. No big audio news this week, just kind of a slow, and really it's a couple of weeks because we didn't record last week either. So no major audio news, which means let's jump into the gaming news. And a couple of stories here. One is, it's a common story around here. Price increases for subscription services. And this time around, it's from Electronic Arts for their EA Play game subscription service. So there are two tiers to EA Play. The base tier is just called EA Play. And it is a service that you pay monthly for, and you get access to a catalog of titles that you can play as much as you want, similar to Xbox Game Pass and that sort of thing, where there's just a catalog that you can download and play. And on for EA Play, it's available on PC, Xbox, and PlayStation. The service is increasing in price, but fortunately only by $1 a month. It used to be $5 a month. It's going up to $6 a month. If you want to play yearly or pay yearly, it's going from $30 a year to $40 a year. So biggest benefits on top of the games that you get to play. It also includes 10-hour free trials of brand new games. So when a new game comes out, you get to play 10 hours of it for free. Now that's assuming that it's not like a really short game, you know, that you might be able to complete in less than 10 hours. So it's not every single new EA game, but it's most of the big ones. You also get a 10% discount if you want to purchase any of these games. And when we're talking about kind of the back title of games, it's not necessarily super old games either. So the annualized sports games are the easiest ones to look at for this. So like there's a new Madden game every year. There's a new soccer game, new NHL, all of those games every single year. Madden releases in August timeframe. I think the latest Madden might now be available inside of EA Play, but like NHL, which I think came out in October this year, I don't think is available inside of EA Play yet, but typically is in the like May to June timeframe. And then the next one will come out in the fall. You'll get a 10-hour free trial and a 10% discount if you want to buy it. Okay, so core EA Play going up to $6 a month. EA Play Pro is the much higher tier. This is a PC-only subscription. And the big difference between EA Play and EA Play Pro is that it includes basically all of EA's new games. And it's not just the base level game. It's what would typically be called like an ultimate edition. So whatever the top tier version of a game is that launches with all of the extra DLC and all of those things, that's the game that you get access to with EA Play Pro. And because of that, and because you typically get access to these games on day one when they launch, this is a more expensive service. So it is more comparable to something like Xbox Game Pass, where all of Microsoft's or Xbox's first-party games launch day one on this, although you don't necessarily get all the DLC when it comes to the EA or to the Xbox games. On the EA service, you do, and the cost here is different. It's been $15 a month. It's going up $2 a month to $17 a month. If you want to pay for a yearly subscription, that's going from $100 to $120 a year. So you do get a nice little discount for paying for a yearly subscription to the service. Now, the other big difference with EA Play Pro is this is PC only. You can't get access to this on consoles, PlayStation or Xbox. But one thing worth pointing out is that EA Play, the lower cost option that's really more of the back catalog type games, if you pay for Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, which is $17 a month on its own, gives you all of the Xbox first party games day and date, plus lots of games from other publishers. Xbox Game Pass Ultimate includes EA Play for free, for no extra cost. And as far as we know, because Xbox hasn't announced anything yet, this cost increase for the EA Play subscription isn't impacting the cost of Xbox Game Pass yet. And frankly, I don't expect it to, at least not right away, because it's only been a few months since the Xbox Game Pass subscription went up by pretty much the same amount as what EA Play is increasing theirs to. And this also really just brings them in line with Xbox Game Pass, Game Pass Ultimate, and with the similar service from Ubisoft. The other interesting gaming news this week is that a new report was put out and that focuses on just what it is that gamers are spending all of their time playing. And this comes from an organization called NewZoo, N-E-W-Z-O-O. They are video game market analyst, and they've been studying what is it that everybody is playing across PC, Xbox, PlayStation, and Switch. And if you think that everybody's out there playing all of the latest games, well, you actually couldn't be further from the truth, because what they found is that most people are actually playing older games, and by a large margin. So in this article, it says 66 titles. That's it. This is over the course of 2023. 66 games accounted for 80% of all playtime. Only 66 games for 80% of the playtime across 2023. And of that playtime, 60% of it was spent on games that are not 1 year old, 2 years old, 3 years old. No, 60% of that playtime was spent on games that are at least 6 years old. And you've got to be thinking, are you kidding me? What are they playing? Well, Fortnite, Minecraft, Roblox, GTA 5, League of Legends. These are all games that are like 10 years old. Some of them are. Rocket League. Also, these games are very old, but they are very successful live service games. And it makes you wonder, like, how much of an impact is this having on all of the game studios and publishers with all of these layoffs that are happening? And I have to think it's a lot, right? Because last year, the only console that wasn't as impacted by this was Switch. Kind of not all that surprising. A ton of time played on the Mario game that came out last year, the Zelda game that came out last year, and the number one selling game across all platforms, and that was Harry Potter Hogwarts Legacy, the first game to be the most sold game for a year, other than a Call of Duty or Grand Theft Auto game since 2008. That's impressive. Also, it came out much earlier in the year than Call of Duty. Typically, you know, Call of Duty is an October game, but still, really, really impressive numbers for that Harry Potter game. So all of the rest of these guys, like on Xbox, Starfield was on the list of top 10 games, but it wasn't at the top. It was like number 8. And the rest, like PlayStation, also not major. Like Spider-Man was on the list, but again, wasn't at the top. Fortnite is on the top of all of these. And so what are game studios supposed to do other than attempt to try to compete? And so they've been trying to do that, but they're not really finding a whole lot of success. Warner Brothers just tried doing this with Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League, right? This just came out in the last few months, tried to make it into a live service game, and it flopped. It wasn't good. But Warner Brothers saw, you know, this is what's making money. This is what's allowing studios to stay in business, despite the fact that they're the ones who published that Harry Potter game that did so well. But there's not lots of recurring revenue from a game like Harry Potter. So they try to put out live service games to compete with Fortnite, Minecraft, Roblox. And it's really hard because not only does it have to be a good game on its own, it's got to be a good enough game to get people to step away from Fortnite. And when they're already entrenched in that ecosystem and Fortnite releases new things to do in that game every single week, it's not like these are quarterly updates. Fortnite is doing this basically weekly. Minecraft has new things all the time. Roblox has tons of user-generated content for people to be checking out. And GTA is just bananas. So how are the game studios supposed to compete? I would like to see them continue to find ways to just make traditional AAA, whether it be single player or multiplayer games, but not feel the need to turn everything into a live service game. But how do you justify spending hundreds of millions of dollars on a game that isn't going to generate months, if not years, of recurring revenue? Maybe, I don't love this, but maybe it's time once again to continue to increase the cost of some of these games. You know, with this generation, the Xbox Series X, PlayStation 5, we have started to see that happen. Video games stayed at $60 for a new title for well over a decade, and now some games are starting to come out at $70. Maybe that's not enough. Maybe it needs to be a little bit more. And would that be a terrible thing? I'm not so sure. But then the question becomes, if those games just get more and more expensive, will people just dig even further into these older, typically free, or at least games that they paid for years ago, games like Fortnite and Minecraft? This is a tough situation, but it's something that the video game industry is continuing to struggle with, and we're being continually impacted by it. So, you know, I'm someone who likes to be playing the new games. I talk every single episode about what I'm playing, and you've heard me over the last few months talk about the fact that my friend group and I were kind of struggling to find what we want to play together because there aren't a lot of great new online multiplayer games for us to be playing right now, at least not on Xbox. So if we were into Fortnite, wouldn't matter. Like, we could just play Fortnite forever, but it's just not really our thing. So really hopeful that the game industry starts to find some better solutions here, or I don't know. I want the game industry to be doing better. I want to see fewer stories about game companies laying off hundreds of people after game releases. And I don't want everything to have to be a live service game. There are plenty of games that do really well and generate lots of hype without having to be live service games. Look back at Elden Ring. That's just one example. Like, there are a lot of games that do really well. The Last of Us, Spider-Man games, God of War games. There's a lot of good ones out there, but if it's hard for the companies to make back their money and compete with Fortnite, then we head down a world where it's just companies trying to make the next live service game, which has proven to be incredibly difficult. All right, so that's it for the news this week. Let's talk briefly about what's going on in my entertainment center. In terms of gaming, yes, I'm playing a little bit of NHL, of course, but I've gotten back into Final Fantasy VII Remake, continuing to play through it. I still go back and forth on this game because I still struggle some with the combat. I'm getting better at it now. I don't really want to decrease the difficulty yet because it is an interesting combat system, but I'm frustrated between the combat system making it harder to win, especially boss fights, combined with the frustratingly slow reality of playing any game on a PlayStation 4. The load times, oh, how did we ever deal with this? Like, now that I'm playing most games on an Xbox Series X, where load times are significantly shorter, it is really, really hard to deal with the amount of time it takes to save, the amount of time it takes to reload after you've died. It's just so slow. Not slow enough to make me want to go drop $500 on a PlayStation 5. This is why I wanted these Final Fantasy games to come to Xbox so that I could play them on my Series X. But I can't, so I continue here on my PlayStation 4. I am now about halfway through it. I'm in Chapter 9 now. I'm not going to say much more than that because I'm probably not the only person who's never finished Final Fantasy VII, so I don't ever want to give any spoilers, even though the original Final Fantasy VII is not quite 30 years old, more than 25 years old at this point. Okay, so what am I watching? No recent movies of late, but I started and finished all of Three Body Problem. It's so, so good. It is really everything that I hoped for. You might remember that I read the trilogy, the audiobook version of the trilogy a couple of years ago. I really liked it. It's good hard sci-fi being sci-fi that has a lot of like actual real-world science and where real-world science actually plays a fairly major role in it. The science itself is good. The acting is really good. Yes, they've made some changes in characters and stuff like that, but I think overall it's done well. And the depth of the storytelling comes through really well. Like, is every single detail from the book there? No, of course not. They couldn't fit all of that into a TV show. But there's just so much depth in everything that is going on in this story. I do have to point out the showrunners for this are the guys who brought Game of Thrones to HBO. And what that means is when there's an opportunity for gore, they make it gory and probably gorier than it, not probably, in my opinion, definitely gorier than it needs to be. There is a scene about halfway through the season. It involves a boat. That's all I'll say. It involves a boat. And when I was reading the book and I got to this part of the book, I thought, if this were ever made into a movie, I would love to see how they would do this. And because it's the showrunners from Game of Thrones, they focused more on let's make this super gory and not really focusing on how to handle the scale of this particular scene in a way that would just blow you away in terms of the visuals of this. There was some of it, but I feel like there was way more of an emphasis on the gore that they could put into this. And the gore, if you haven't started Three Body Problem, it's not like it waits until episode 5. Now, it's not all over the place. Like, the storyline doesn't lend itself to tons of this, but you should be warned. The very first scene of the very first episode is a hard scene to watch. And it's gorier, it's grosser, it's harder than it needs to be, in my opinion. So if you struggle with physical violence and gore from physical violence, then maybe this isn't the show for you. But if you really like hard sci-fi, it's so good. It is so well done. It's on Netflix. Go and check it out. I cannot recommend it enough. It's so good. And I'm really happy that they were able to do such a good job with a book series that I really, really enjoyed, even though it's fairly depressing, but it's still really good. Check it out. On the book side, I started The Stand by Stephen King. And I'm excited to read this finally. You know, it's one of these books that's, you know, it's always been out there as like This is one of the best pieces of fiction by one of the greatest novelists of a generation. It's just so long. The audiobook version is 48 hours long. I am like 16 hours in, and there is still so much more to go. And is it good? Yes. But does it seem far more dense than it needs to be? Well, 16 hours in, it sure feels like it. Like, I'm sure that the story is going to get really good, and there are some things that are starting to happen now that are really interesting. But interesting enough to justify this much buildup and backstory? Oof. It better be really, really phenomenal. It's just so long. It's so long, and I have so many other books that I want to be reading. But I do want to get through this, finish it. And I don't say that like it's a slog or anything. I just wish it wasn't so long. It could be really good and doesn't have to be 48 hours. So I will be talking about The Stand, I think, for a few weeks, because this is going to take me a while to get through it. Okay, well, that's it for what's going on in my entertainment center. If you would like to get a hold of us, there are a bunch of ways you can do that. I'm on Twitter at Josh Pollard. The website is at DigiMediaZone. Richard is on Mastodon. He's the only Richard Gunther on Mastodon, I believe. I think I'm still the only Josh Pollard on Mastodon. And then, of course, we're on YouTube. If you're not already watching this on YouTube, then head on over to our YouTube channel and subscribe there too. We could really benefit from that. And maybe you will enjoy the YouTube version, the video version of the show also. And once we get into more of a routine again, maybe once my schedule stops being so insane with my half marathon training, we'll get back to doing these shows live on Twitch also. But that's going to do it for episode 645. I'm Josh Pollard. Thank you for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.